It's Daffy Duck's Easter show and the Berenstain Bears Easter surprise. Then Deadly Cargo could put BJ out of business Tuesday on NBC.
Well, stupid, are you ready?
Okay, Smokey, roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and this is one of those episodes where I get to ask Mark, what the hell are we doing right now?
We're celebrating...
What the hell are we doing?
We're celebrating Easter.
Easter? It's fucking May. It's mid-May. We should be celebrating Mother's Day, which was last week, but nevertheless. We're doing an Easter special in mid-May, which is not as bad as doing a Christmas special in early May, which we just did. But this one made me feel some things. Not in a good way, but in an infuriating way. And this one has a couple of titles, too.
Yes, it's almost like coming up its damn mind.
Yeah, it could be Daffy Duck's Easter special. It could be Daffy Duck's Easter show. It could be Daffy Duck's Easter egg extravaganza. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's the broadcast title.
Yeah, you might as well call it Lucifer as well, because it's hellish. But yeah, Daffy Duck's Easter special.
Yeah. Let's just go right into it.
I mean, do we have any connection to this beforehand?
No.
Do we have any background with Daffy Duck's Easter special? No?
No, I've never seen this before in my life. The only thing I know is that when they... Because it's on one of the Golden Collections.
Drink. Yes, it is. It's on Golden Collection 6, drink.
The last one.
The last one, where they're like, do we have anything else left? Well, we have this crabby Daffy Duck Easter special from the early 80s. Sure, let's throw it on there. We're already wincing early, so you know what we thought about this, but let's just make it clear that this was meant to be a primetime Easter special on a major network with a major sponsor. This was sponsored by McDonald's, which was big even for 1980.
Yeah, I mean, really look at the zeitgeist of America. It was Looney Tunes and McDonald's.
Yes. And it made sense because this was an Easter special. A lot of, you know, fowl-related Looney Tunes characters were in the mix. There's, you know, a lot of eggs. And so McDonald's thought, well, you know, we have something to do with eggs. You know, with chickens and things. And also burgers, but anyway. I'm now realizing the flaw in this plan. Another flaw being that in nowhere in this Easter special are there any rabbits, especially bugs. So
nope.
So what are, again, I ask you, what are we even doing here? Is there any other backstory, or should I get into the day of?
Sure, let's go into it. This came out on this aired on April 1st, 1980 on
yes.
NBC?
Yes, on NBC.
What else aired on TV that day? Did you let that up?
I didn't find out what this was up against on television. I probably should have. But no, and now a very special Easter edition of MASH. Oh, yeah. I think we're out of Easter eggs. That was my award-winning Alan Alda impression, ladies and gentlemen.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. And we see. This would have aired at around 8 o'clock. Laverne Shirley was playing.
Okay.
At 8:30, Antonio the Amazing. So, you know, that could have been going up against it.
Well, there were also some cool things that were happening on this day. I mean, there's a pretty big born on this day, Mark, and that's Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Son of Bob Orton, wrestling extraordinaire of the 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. Well, not the 90s, because he would only been a teenager, so do that. I don't know a ton about wrestling. I just know the name Randy Orton. Big WWE superstar, second generation. In theaters, you could have caught Coal Miner's Daughter, which won Sissy Spacek her Oscar. And the number one song in the U.S., which I wish that there were this many rock songs on the charts these days, but the number one song in the U.S. was Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 by Pink Floyd.
Nice.
Very Can't nice. Go wrong with a little single off the wall.
All right, so this was directed by Friz Freleng, written by Friz Freleng, Tony Benedict, and
John.
Yeah.
We meet
He's
again.
He's back. If Patty Freeling's back, everybody.
Friz is back, yes. But this is very much a De Patty Freeling production. Some of the other directing names in this, Tony Benedict, Jerry Chiniqui, Art Davis, who we haven't covered in a while, and Dave DeTaege. But this is very much the brainchild of Friz, David DePatie, and John Dunn. The trio that made Daffy Duck's Fantastic Island so painful. Because so much was based on the ideas of this one friend of theirs that... Okay, here's how I best put this, Mark. You ever have someone in your friend group that, like... And this is, I think this is universal to a lot of people, so it's not just you. You ever have someone in your friend group who... you didn't make friends with, he came in through other people, he's a mutual friend, and he's just sort of in the group, and he's not a very good member of the group, he's kind of annoying, and you don't have the heart to tell the people in your friend group that are friends with him that, hey, maybe you should stop bringing him. You have one of those, Mark?
Yeah.
We all do. I've had a couple in my life. And it's like, yeah, you don't want to say, hey, Friz, you can just stop bringing John Dunn to these Looney Tunes projects, because Friz and John Dunn were probably very friendly, and he fucking dedicated Fantastic Island to him, and per his wishes, made the concept of the film something that John came up with. So you can tell they were tight, but a lot of what I'm getting from a lot of these John Dunn projects is just a very familiar runoff of quality, a tendency to repeat things that were already good, and just things that aren't as good as they could have been. Now, John Dunn is affiliated with one good ones, like Transylvania 65,000. John Dunn is capable of good work. A broken clock is correct once or twice a day. But we've came into a lot of horrible John Dunn luck on this, and... as much as I want to say nice things because a member of the Dunn family might eventually happen upon this, as far as the last couple of decades of Looney Tunes cartoons are concerned, he is poison.
Yeah, and we got these three segments right here in the special that demonstrate a lot of the weaknesses of both John Dunn as well as the weaknesses of the De Patty Freeling era.
Yeah.
The animation's better. I'll give it that by a bit in this than is in... Oh, come on.
It's okay.
It's like TV commercial quality, the way I put it. I was just waiting for, like, the Trix Rabbit to show up or something. Or, like, Foghorn to take out a box of General Mills cereal products.
I say, this cereal is delicious.
Yeah, like, I was waiting for it in some cases. But, yeah, it's...
it's not great. But it's great. Not Groovy Ghoulies bad.
No. Though there are some character traits in these. I'm like, are you sure you guys remember these characters? But
to be fair, it had been a couple of decades, but
yeah.
These are a lot of the same Looney Tunes personnel. They're just working for a smaller animation budget and with less than stellar writing. And so it's obviously not going to be as golden as the originals, but they will try. They will try very hard, as evidenced by this opening and bridging conceit of the entire thing, which is based off of Duck Amuck.
Which is the closest thing we're getting to any Chuck Jones involvement in this special.
Yep. I mean, not only is it a Duck Amuck rehash, but it's Friz Freleng trying to do a Duck Amuck rehash. Like, a lot of what made Duck Amuck and even Rabbit Rampage work was because of Chuck. And having Friz try and do it is noble. Not Maurice, but noble. But, well, what did you think of this opening?
Very slow.
Yeah. What?
It was very, very slow paced. I'm not calling this section.
No. No, I wasn't going there. It's very funny because I had the exact opposite note. To me, it felt rushed. It felt like a lot of beats weren't allowed to really resonate, and a lot of these sort of bits were just sort of thrown atop each other without a lot of room to breathe. So already, you and I are on very different pages going into this.
Well, wouldn't it be amazing if I just gave this a 5 out of 5? Like, oh yeah, this is amazing. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
The whole time, I was hoping. I had a feeling that you would have a lot of the same opinions as me. But back in my mind, I was going, what if he likes this?
No, I have my...
I know it's unlikely, but what if? Oh boy. But yeah, no, it's very rushed, and it leads into like the opening title sequence, which looks even kind of sloppy for this division with just bad handwriting at the Daffy Duck's Easter show. But it's you know, it's the usual stuff. It's Daffy art arguing with the artist.
Yeah, he calls the font graffiti.
Yeah.
Wait, it's graffiti, and it's like it's all brown. Yeah. That's his complaint, is that, oh, what? It's an Easter special. There should be a bunch of colors. And then Daffy gets, you know, painted orange. Like, not me. It's just Duck Amuck, but not as good.
Basically. That's what a lot of this ends up being, or feeling like. So, getting into the first real segment, which also is bridged by a Daffy Duck Amuck-esque conceit. It's, you know, Daffy arguing about, you know, he wants to get dressed up for this first part. So the guy paints him a little scuba diving outfit. Were you caught off guard by the weird little sort of zoom and hold after he's in the scuba diving outfit?
Well, you see, you gotta hold for the laughter.
Yeah, it was weird to me.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird when animated productions pause for laughter.
Because usually, a lot of animated productions in this type of genre would just can their own laughter and put it in, like the Hanna-Barbera stuff. Or like the Flintstones. But, yeah, no, so it's Daffy. It gets redressed into, like, a nice little tux. And then we get Foghorn coming in, chastising him, saying, you don't come in till scene 49, which I thought was a fun thing. I also like that Foghorn's relationship with the artist is amicable. Like he just goes, okay, how about getting a little dialogue? And the artist literally draws on the scene, cock-a-doodle-doo. And Foghorn's like, yeah, no, that's good. I like meaty dialogue. So that was at least a good gag. This first cartoon, which is not entirely a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon, but it's led by him to an extent. It's about Foghorn essentially running a chicken coop, which is the outside. It's called the Chicken Shack, which, I don't know about you, that made me hungry for tenders. I could use some about now. I know that's a horrible thing to say about a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon, but man, do I want fried chicken.
Oh, we'll get more into that down the line.
Oh, man. But the concept is that Foghorn's hen house is in charge of all the Easter eggs, and he's speeding up the production, and it's all the hens and Prissy, who's late, and they're all in charge of different colors of eggs, you know, red and blue, and he's given Prissy the turquoise color of eggs because it's intricately colored, and also she hasn't been laying especially shapely eggs. This is a good concept. It's not funny, but it's a good concept for a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon. The only problem is this is not a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon.
Yeah, also, there's just some weird lines here that I just didn't vibe with. Like Prissy, She came in because she's late. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I missed the bus. And Fangorn's like, yeah. When it comes to Brain, she's missed the bus too. She was late! So
was it Foghorn won't pass up an opportunity to insult someone as well. So I kind of get it.
Eh.
You know.
Dick?
Well, that's the whole thing. He is kind of a dick. That's the thing about a lot of those early shorts. It's like people are just like Foghorn eventually does get a comeuppance in a lot of them because, you know, he kind of deserves it.
Yeah, so they were introduced to our actual leads of this segment.
Yeah, it was a decoy.
It's a, okay. Tell me this isn't a Patty Freeling production without telling me it's a Patty Freeling production. It has Sylvester the Cat and Daffy Duck in the same short.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it is kind of cool to see them together. On the other hand, it basically, like, you can tell that Freeling and DePatie's strength was not in the Bugs and Daffy dynamic, but in the dynamic between Daffy and someone who can give him a bit more of, like, screen time or can give him a bit more of the upper hand or something, like Sylvester or Speedy Gonzalez or any of those guys. Maybe not quite as successful, but they seem to know what they were doing, I think. But the actual concept of this one is, you know, Prissy accidentally lays a golden egg, which makes its way to Daffy and Sylvester, and a lot of the cartoon is just Daffy and Sylvester fighting over the golden egg, which, sure.
Yeah, and I love how before Daffy finds the golden egg, they have to really talk about the friendship between Daffy. They're the best of friends.
Yeah, we've never really seen them be friendly before, but yeah, they're the best of friends.
Never. Sure. I swear that they're forcing this friend thing so much, I was expecting them to start singing that song from Tom and Jerry the movie the 90s.
Well, the thing about a lot of these is that they are, I mean, a lot of these cartoons are pretty talky. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stretch that runtime.
Yeah, they forget that, you know, a lot of what made these originals work were gag mentality, physical comedy, timing, and not just talking. And, you know, not all cartoons where people just talk are good. I mean, granted, Norman Normal is a lot of talking, and that one's great. But, yeah, it's a lot of talk. I mean, there are some good gags in the sequence between Daffy and Sylvester. Sylvester is making a run for it with the golden egg and saying that he's filthy and vulgarly rich, and Daffy bursts through one of the little parts of the fence and gets the egg and says, "Now you're just filthy and vulgar." That's a good line.
Yeah, and I did like, so they go to our side of the fence and Sylvester switches the egg with a rock. Daffy goes, "A rock? What does it do anything?" Throws in the air. I do love, we don't even see it.
Yes.
Just, it goes behind the wall, it hits Sylvester, and Sylvester's knocked down the side of the fence. That was good.
Yes. Great timing. What's great about the Sylvester and Daffy combo is that both of them can lose and it'll be funny. We're rooting for Daffy because it's his special, but at the same time, we can laugh when Daffy loses, we can laugh when Sylvester loses. But at the same time, who's the real hero? That's the thing. It's not like Bugs, where like, okay, we'll root for Bugs. Bugs will get out of it. He's the hero. Here it's like, well, I guess if either of them win, that'll be fine. Or if neither of them win, that'll be fine. Like, you know, we're not exactly tied to any of them. But yeah, it's a lot of just little gags where things happen, but not the best. Like there's a gag where Sylvester is hanging on to the back of a taxi cab trying to get the egg. Or there's other little ones.
Oh. That gag went on forever.
Yeah, it did.
Or Daffy's in the taxi. So Daffy gets a taxi, and he's like, okay, I got the gold. And Sylvester's just tapping on the back of the taxi glass. And Daffy's like, oh, who's that? And essentially, Daffy's like, I'm paranoid. People get paranoid when they're rich. That's a common trait. And it just that for like 30, 45 seconds, and it goes on.
Yeah.
For a bit.
And you get a lot of gags like that, where it just, time is being taken up, but it not for very funny things. Like, I will say, because there is one where Daffy gets Sylvester, essentially, and tries to force him to give up the egg, and Sylvester says, "Only over this pussycat's dead body." And Daffy says, that's much too messy. I prefer to use ancient Chinese tickle torture, which I got a laugh out of the absurdity of that. And then because this has only a nominal structure, when this has to end, the ending kind of comes out of nowhere. Because Daffy makes a plan to hide the egg, to paint the egg white and hide it where they found it, which is under Prissy.
Oh, I did not like this.
And then it ends up, without us even seeing it, being herded into a truck. And then the ending is Daffy and Sylvester trying to crack all of the eggs to try and find it. And then it stops.
Which, okay.
You gotta pace it, guys.
I thought it was like, they put the egg back, but they didn't, I think it was just timing, which is they were just getting taken care of the eggs, but at the same time Daffy put the egg back, so maybe like they thought the egg got taken, but it makes no sense. Like, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense within the narrative. Yeah. It's like. Yeah, and I put down here in caps. And that's where we ended? Because I feel like it's such a whatever. Oh, the line from Sylvester's like, well, I'll tell you one thing. You're sure be making a big omelet because you may bring all the eggs.
Yeah. It's not a great ending. And it's not a. It's structured so that we can't even realize it's an ending until the next short starts up, or at least until you go to commercial. Like, even when you're going to commercial, like, is it going to continue after we're done? Like, this is why you structure things properly. This is why you pace things properly. Or else it's just a cartoon that goes on and then stops. A cartoon shouldn't stop. It should end. You should know this, Friz Freeling. You did this for 20, 30-odd years. Why is John Dunn undoing all of the good mojo that you had all of those years?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Decent gag energy in this one, but yeah, pissed off in a couple of
places. Yeah, this wasn't very good. A bit too much focus on friendship, which, okay, I get it. It's the 80s. The Looney Tunes are for the kids now. But my god, what were these two ever friends? They spent time together in original shorts.
Maybe what they could have done is they could have gone Daffy, like, thinking they're friends, and Sylvester's like, hey, I wouldn't go that far, buddy.
What? Something like that.
That would have been funny.
The ending is nothing. It makes a little sense. It's just, and we're out. Yeah. Also, just a quick thing. What's the go of Mel in this?
I thought he was fine.
I think his Daffy was a bit.
No.
Eh, but not too bad.
No, I think that this is, you know, it's not until the later 80s where his smoking really starts to grate on his character work, but I thought he was fine here.
Also, it must have been an easy day for Mel. I mean, it's Sylvester and Daffy.
Yeah.
Which, as everyone knows, it's the same voice.
But of course, he went into his Foghorn, which is, I think his Foghorn is among his easier voices as well. Because all he's got to do is just do an accent.
So what would you give this section?
I would give this a 2 out of 5.
Same.
Okay.
Same. Yeah, I give this 2 out of 5.
Right.
So in our next Duck Amuck section.
I liked this one.
Yes, I do like this section where essentially it's like, like Daffy's saying, like, oh, I need. What was the excuse? It was like something like.
I forget that the artist dressed him up like a chicken.
I put him as Big Bird, because I.
Pretty much.
Pretty much been. I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay, cool. And then, you know, they're doing this, and Daffy's like, oh, wait, I don't know, because it was about the basket. They want to draw a basket.
Yeah.
And eventually the artist just draws water, an ocean underneath Daffy, which, yeah. Seen it.
Throwing him in the water and then sends a torpedo after him. It's great. No, it is possible for them to do decent gags in this. I mean, it's going to pale in comparison to the Chuck Jones ones, but these are still pretty fun, especially with Daffy in that chicken suit.
Yeah. But then we get into our second cartoon.
Yes.
Which is titled The Chocolate Chase. Oh, by the way, they recut these to their own short. So they have, yes, their own titles and everything. But
right.
This is called The Chocolate Chase. It's a Daffy and Speedy cartoon because it's 1980 and yeah, that's all they know how to do.
Yeah, basically. First of all, my first note that I took in this cartoon was, in all caps, less racist Mexican characters?
Mm-hmm.
There are a few that aren't that racist.
Shocking.
Positively shocking. No, it's Mel kind of doing a normal authoritarian voice as this sort of sheriff mouse. And he does sort of go into his Slowpoke Rodriguez voice a little bit, but they're not as racist as usual. I mean, his Speedy obviously is his Speedy, so it's going to be what it is. But, like, these are pretty safer voices, I think.
Yeah, and pretty much what the plot is of this one is Daffy has a new role of protecting the chocolate bunny factory from the mice.
Now, here's the thing. You have the chocolate bunny factory in Mexico, which is one of the hottest countries around, and you're making chocolate. Isn't that going to melt? Cheese, I get. Chocolate.
Features? I don't know. But I do like the line. So Daffy accepts the position. I do love Daffy's line of, thanks, I love symbols of authority. Like, okay, that's Daffy.
Yes.
That works.
I like that a lot. That's great. But what really hit me here is that this is basically the plot of the original Speedy Gonzales cartoon, but with chocolate bunnies instead of cheese.
Replace Sylvester with Daffy, cheese with chocolate, and good animation with commercial level quality.
Yeah. And we cut out, obviously, the part where Speedy gets found by his cousin or whatever. But this is just pretty much the same thing as Speedy Gonzales, with a lot of the same gags. For instance, the first gag after Daffy realizes how fast Speedy is him getting a net and being run through some cacti, which is the similar gag from Speedy Gonzales. Can't just copy shit, John Dunn.
And also, there's like a motorcycle bit. That seemed familiar to me, but it was from Speedy Gonzales. I think that was from Pied Piper, maybe?
One of them. I just forget which one. But yeah, it's lots of gags that are very similar to gags from Speedy Gonzales. And there's not a lot of real added comedic energy because Speedy does the same thing every time. And Daffy doesn't have a ton of great things to do. What I did like was the change in scenery of actually going inside the factory and getting some conveyor belt stuff.
Yep.
I just wish there was more of it. Because it's really only there for the last gag, which is the most formative gag of the whole thing. Which is Daffy chasing Speedy around these conveyor things, falling accidentally into the chocolate mixer.
It's such an empty space, too. It's just, wow, there's not a lot going on in this one.
Really, there isn't.
And the process it takes to get from Daffy Falls into the vat of chocolate to the reveal. It's like, we get it. You turn to a chocolate bar. But here's what really got to me. It's around here that the implementation of sound effects are used to demonstrate chocolate leaving the machine and going on to the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
And
hey, amigos, come quick.
What's with the damn Scooby-Doo sound effects?
Yeah, I think they just had some Hanna-Barbera sound effects handy and they wanted to use them.
Did they toss the Treg Brown ones in a fire? Did they become too expensive?
Yeah, Treg wanted more money.
Oh, man, we can't afford the sound effects anymore. Quick, go to Hanna-Barbera, see if we can borrow theirs.
Yeah, basically that's what happened. But really, what the whole end game of this cartoon is Daffy being shoved into this chocolate conveyor and being turned into a chocolate bunny-shaped duck. Which is the kind of morbid ending that the originals would have nailed, but here it's kind of just feeble.
Oh my god! In a normal cartoon, in a Golden Era cartoon, In a Go on Air cartoon, it probably would have been like the mice are celebrating around the, you know, the Chocolito Day Duck or whatever. And it just have Daffy, maybe like zoom in. We transparent away from the chocolate Daffy to the real Daffy. Says some quip like, well, at least I can stay here till Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
And then we cut. But no, instead, it's just like, Daffy's cool with the mice now.
Because apparently, the being covered in cocoa has sweetened his disposition. You get it?
Yeah, that's the excuse they get.
Motherfucker. Oh, man. Not much going on here at all.
No. Nah.
A lot of empty space, a lot of reused gags, a lot of reused energy and stuff that wouldn't have been... It would have been done a lot better in the originals. It fails as a Daffy cartoon. It fails as a Speedy cartoon. It fails on so many levels.
Yeah, I'm giving this a 1.5 out of 5 anvils.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
This had nothing going for it. The jokes were all repetitive. It was just... Bleh.
And if you thought that one was bad... Okay. First of all, did you remember anything remotely good in this next Duck-a-Muck segment?
This is where we... Well, first of all, the first line from Daffy is like, "Great Scott, something, something, something." So I saw it down in all caps. Exactly. I'm like, oh, yay, he said the thing.
And it's 5 years earlier than Back to the Future as well.
So. Yeah, so this last Duck-a-Muck segment is like, you know, again, like, oh, he's angry at the... Or, yeah, exactly, he's a flower. He's like, oh, what'd you do that for? And then... And then the artist draws a big bee. A big bee.
Thinking bee, thinking bee, thinking bee.
Hey, for more thoughts on B-movie, there's a commentary for it. It's
it's just, it's an hour and a half of us sighing miserably.
This big demented bee. And my first thought was, if that bee was colored black and white and had some green fur, it would be great for the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Bees. My God.
Beetlejuice.
Jesus Christ.
Yo, I'm just imagining. They brought Beetlejuice back to Broadway, and they were able to bring everything back. But I just see the idea of, oh no, they couldn't afford the giant snake anymore, so it's now this, like, animatronic bee, this, like, bee puppet or something. Wait, that was the last cartoon. It's titled Daffy Flies North.
Mm.
That's a shitty title.
It is. It reeks of desperation and unoriginality, which is John Donne.
Yeah, also, it's just... Okay, I don't know. The font on... When they cut it up and they put it on, like, HBO Max or whatever, the font they use for Daffy Flies North, it looks like the title font from, like... The Adventures of Winnie the Pooh? Or something? I don't know. It's just like,
yeah.
Daffy Flies North. Roll with it. And why does this one have the most full Looney Tunes Wikipedia article, too? What the
I don't
hell?
Know, man.
Anyways.
Why is a question I asked a lot in this. The whole premise of this is that Daffy is part of a huge flock of ducks flying north for the summer, and he's being bossed around by this sort of leader, army-ish sort of duck, and this is sort of like the premise of the one whose title I always forget, where he's up on the mantle.
Yeah, it's Crack Quack?
Sure. And... I forget about it every time.
Yes. So, crack quack. Got it right.
It's
crack
quack. Yeah. Yes. But here it's just like, it's like the opening setup of that was given its own cartoon, where Daffy is let loose from his flock and has to get home north anyway. And, I mean, first of all, the sound of Slappy...
Thank you, Mr. Exposition.
The sound of Daffy slapping against the ground is at least pretty funny. But again, these are Hanna-Barbera sound effects.
Yeah, so he lands in a barrel of hay. He's like, oh, that wasn't so bad. Turns around, see there's a pitchfork in his butt, which is a reused gag from that one cartoon that's not okay.
Yeah, the one where Elmer enslaves Daffy, yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Now, I will say, this was the one short in the special that I dug the premise for. Daffy has to go north, and he has to find a way to get there. I thought, oh, okay, and like hitchhiking. I'm like, okay, that could be funny. Like, maybe he goes to the driver's car, and he, like, annoys the driver, and the driver is thinking of ways to get rid of Daffy, and maybe at the end he, like, drives off a cliff or something. That could be fun. But,
Mark, no, the thing about that. Is that's already a Golden Age Daffy Duck cartoon.
Oh, damn!
It is a Daffy Duck cartoon called Thumb Fun, which is a Daffy and Porky cartoon, where Daffy has to hitchhike south for the winter and starts to annoy Porky, who picks him up.
Oh, never mind! Shit!
So, again,
I'm gonna watch that after this.
We are now counting three cartoons that John Dunn and friends have ripped off to make this one. Three!
Well, okay. This short isn't about that, though. It's only the beginning.
No, but it includes that.
And we get away from that premise by the reveal that the only cards willing to pick up Daffy is a car full of Elmer Fudds and their rabbit dogs.
That was silly.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
I also liked the gag after that, which is there's a little easy chair on a hitch, and the second Daffy gets on it, the hitch falls off, and then Daffy and the chair start going down the hill.
Yeah, they land in the water, and the fish look at him like, what?
I liked that shot.
And it was a really good shot, and now I just want to take that and put that into Little Mermaid.
Anda, who's this guy?
What are you looking at?
I will say, though, that a lot of the problems with this short is that Daffy has no one to work off of for most of it. Or at least not a sentient character to work off of. It's very much him against the elements and against things that happen to him, which can only go so far. And a lot of it is just, you know, a lot of dead air because it's just Daffy talking at himself. And that isn't as good as him talking at Porky or at Bugs or whoever. Like, the first one I gave it shit, but at least he had Sylvester to work off of. Second one, at least he had Speedy to work off of. Here he has this fucking horse who Mark thought it was a camel. I thought it was an anorexic donkey. The fact that he shows up into the water and sees this horse, and Daffy has to say that it's a horse.
No doubt, horse. You are impressed with my astonishing skill. Why walk when one can ride? Of course. It's the answer to my dilemma.
That says a lot. Because it says that the audience couldn't figure out that it was a horse for themselves, so Daffy had to say it. Was that a test screening edition? Did someone come around at a test screening and go, now how many people could tell that that was a horse? And, like, nobody raised their hand, so they had to reanimate it and get Mel Blanc back into the studio and say, that's a horse.
It's a really bad-looking horse.
But this is a side tangent. I hate when movies and products do that. I hate when people are so dumb that they can't understand, like, things that are clearly spelled out without words and things, and so they have to say, you see, folks, this is this. Like, there's the fucking, and I don't even know if it'll still be circulating by that point, there's the Progressive ad where it's Flo going to her sister's place, and her sister is trying to get a baby to sleep, and realizes the only way she'll get the baby to sleep is by having Flo talk about Progressive's insurance policies and thereby explaining the advertising hook to the audience. And this is the kind of hook that doesn't need to be spelled out to an audience, but literally what happens is that, you know, after the baby has fallen asleep, she literally closes the door and you just hear a obviously later recorded bit of her going, "Sleeping baby." So there were people who saw this in focus groups that were too dumb to realize that that was the reason that she was closing the door. It's like, oh my God, do they not get along? Was she closing the door on them because there's a sort of contentious relationship? No, clearly, you don't need to include any of this. Clearly, I'm just angry.
So, what we're trying to say is, you can lead an audience just to a horse, but you can't make them understand it.
Yes. But is it really a horse?
Of course. So, anyways... The short.
Could you imagine if it was Mr. Ed? Get off me, you asshole.
Okay. Side tangent. Watch Knickknacks. The channel I talked about, we did a good Looney Tune episode. Watch this episode of Mr. Ed. Because it's like, you know, it's a simple, like, oh, it's nice to know, like, okay, here's the history of Mr. Ed, and here's Air. And then he goes into his personal thoughts on it. He fucking hates the show. He hates it. And it's so funny.
What's wrong with Mr. Ed? It's not hurting anybody. It's just Mr. Ed.
Hello.
What's wrong with that?
No. The horse isn't the problem. You think he's the focus of the show? He's not. It's your typical 50s sitcom plots. And it's like, you know, oh man, I don't put any of the shit in. The husband is like, oh boy, I sure hate my wife. She sure is a pain in the neck.
Why don't you divorce her?
Or something like that.
So he's basically Wilson the neighbor. He's like, hey,
yes, essentially.
Tim,
exactly.
You might as well cut your hedges. I can't see.
So yeah, this short is now about the adventures of Daffy Duck and a horribly drawn horse.
Yes, and it's basically Daffy's struggle to get on the horse, get a saddle on the horse, get the horse moving. None of this works. It's not even that funny. A lot of it is just Daffy's quick gags to get on the horse and him immediately failing and him trying again without a lot of room to actually make the gag work. And it's just little stuff that doesn't lead anywhere. Like, there's another one where, like, it was something involving this is what it is. I remember it now. Daffy ties himself to the horse, but forgets that, like, the rope it'll hold him in place, but it won't hold him directly at the same point on the horse. So he literally slides underneath the horse. The horse goes into the water, and then you get Daffy dragging the horse out of the water. And Daffy is painted blue all of a sudden. Is it because he was just holding his breath? Is he sad?
I think that was one of the moments I typed. Ugh. I typed that. Did I type it twice in here? Nope. Oh, yes, I did. I typed ugh twice while watching this.
Well, it's good because we needed a title for this episode.
No.
Ooh.
Easter egg special. Also, there's a moment where, like, Daffy's chasing the horse because Daffy's trying to get the saddle on. He's trying to get the saddle on the horse.
Yeah.
And the horse keeps moving. And Daffy's running sound effect is Fred Flintstone.
Yes!
The running! It's so specific.
Yabba dabba, do not.
Yabba dabba, sue, more like it. Hey,
wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yogi Bear.
So you were just doing a Flintstones joke, and then you proceeded to do Yogi Bear.
Yogi Bear. I'm sorry.
Because Barney and Yogi Bear sound so... okay, I see what your point is.
They're not the same voice.
Hey, Fred, why don't you... Hey, boo-boo. They're a little...
They're a little safe.
And now, for good measure, here's Mr. Ed. Well, Burr. Yabba dabba do.
Now, you would have thought with the Honeymooners connection to the Flintstones, they would have... there probably is, like, episode of the Flintstones where they do, like, a Mr. Ed joke or something. But it's like Mr.
Pelican. Hey, Fred, I won't stop eating this dead horse.
Bon. You.
Fred just sounds
Fuck
tired.
Fuck you, Bon. Fuck you. I can't do Fred.
What happened to Fred?
Wilma. She said... I gotta get my tubes tied, Barn.
Your friend just sounds like Wilson Fisk. You embarrassed me in front of her. Yabba dabba do.
Diabetes. Alright. Oh. I see. Bon. I got the diabetes.
Oh, what? Right. We've gone mad. Craig just left. Craig just said, "Fuck it." Oh God! I'm gonna tell you folks what just happened. So, when we record these episodes, we have a bot named Craig that also does the record when we do this on Discord. In the middle of this laughing fit that the both of us had, Craig just left. On his own accord. We didn't ask him to leave. He just saw what we were doing and went, "Nah, that's it. Fuck it. I gotta get out of here. Can't deal with this shit no more."
Here's what happened. We said Wilson Fisk. For some reason, my brain went to this. That's why I said diabetes.
Hello, I'm Wilfred Brimley here for Daredevil. If you or a crime fighter that you know have suffered from diabetes.
That's how bad the special is. Rare self-slap over own stupidity than this fucking cartoon.
To quote Craig Ferguson and Jeff. Anyway, if you have diabetes, Sal is the way to go.
If you have diabetes, Wilfred Brimley's gonna kick your ass.
Anyway, where were we?
Where were we actually? So yeah.
Where were we?
Well, Mr. Ed. After the thing with the saddle, Daffy repeats a line from a better cartoon.
Yeah.
He's on the roof. He says,
"You yellow rascal, you've got to get up pretty early to outwit this little black duck."
I got up to 4:45.
Oh, and I think, like, in the same moment, he says, "Does he get the swashbuckling line after that?"
Something or like that, yeah.
At the next gag, we're like, "Yeah, so like, don't remind me of better shorts, you dingus."
No, but. Yeah, a lot of this next stuff is just not good. He ends up being chased by something, right?
A bull.
Right. Because he tries riding a bull all the way there. That doesn't work. And so he ends up being chased by a bull for a large period of time, and he ends up being chased to an airport where he gets on a plane to escape from the bull that is headed south, where he just came. Which would have been a great joke had he not explained it. Oh, I guess I went south, which means it's going to take me even further to get north. Like, we could have figured that shit out, too.
He just goes further south. It's not funny.
No. It's not funny. It's not a good ending, either. Why over-explain it?
The only positive I can say is, at least, he went to, like, South America. Like, he didn't go to, like, the south. He went to, like, Mexico or something, right?
Well, some city. It just wasn't some sure city. Which one. Miami, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so at least when he went south, he went to the party south, and not the racist.
He just runs into Tony Montana.
This town is like a great big duck just waiting to get plucked.
Anyway, that one sucked. It sucked.
Both that joke and the show.
Yeah, the joke, but mostly the cartoon. Yeah, it sucked. Didn't like it at all. Conceptually, I see where this could be pretty good, but Daffy had no one to work off of. The horse was, I suppose, like, they tried to make that the hook of the piece, but it was not a very good one because the horse wasn't a very good fleshed out character and really badly designed. Took too long to get there. There was no structure. It meandered. It went every which way. The ending was overexplained. Not a point to be found. Usually these have a point. There was no point. None.
This is the only one that had a decent enough premise and did nothing with it. And it just went on off on a bad horse joke brigade. It's not good. Not good, folks. 1 out of 5 anvils.
1 out of 5, yeah.
Did not like.
And we end with one last duck-a-muck pick. This one isn't very memorable at all.
What the fuck are you doing?
Oh, it's him.
Oh, the egg.
It's him being enclosed in an egg, and he paints on it, don't open until next Easter. And then Daffy eventually gets out of it and agrees with it and restates the joke for us. So how do we give this, how do we analyze this special as a whole? Because with the pieces we didn't like.
Did not like.
No, did not like. One of those, you think that starting out it's going to be, okay, the first one's bad, it'll get better. It doesn't. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And it's not the fault of Daffy. They knew what made Daffy good. They just didn't know how to make him a sustainable force for cartoons. These shorts weren't great. The wraparound was only nominally okay. Added some decent stuff with Duck and Muck logic, but it wasn't as good as Chuck Jones's. Not good at all, folks.
I'm giving this a 1 out of 5 anvils.
I'm giving it a 1.5 cumulatively, but the forces of John Dunn counteract the forces of Friz Freleng so much, and I feel so bad because some very talented people work on this, a lot of which came from the Golden Age. And
exactly.
The desire to recreate and to refurbish jokes and gags and make them new with worse animation and worse idea men is the ideas that doom people and doom companies. And this was not good. And this is not even a year before Looney 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 Bugs Bunny movie, which I do like, and a lot of these people didn't
like.
So,
explain.
Do not recommend.
Well, given with those movies, it wasn't as much of hard work because that one already had. Because the good gag work from that movie is from good gag work in the cartoon. So.
Yeah.
So, Wilford Brimley Fisk, what do you think of it?
I didn't like it. It made me angry.
Let's see, what the people out there seem to think of these.
All right, so we've got an interesting antidote from the RW24 show at RWinger24. They said that, interesting to note that Arthur Davis came back and co-directed the segment short seen in the special. Yeah?
Yeah. Arthur Davis, we like. Arthur Davis is a great animation director. Arthur Davis was a great director for some of the Golden Age ones. I want to say he helped the proceedings, but a lot of this wasn't well animated and wasn't well done, and I don't think it was Arthur's fault per se. I think it was the budget they were working with.
But, yeah.
I mean, it proved that even great filmmakers and great Looney Tunes personnel could fall on hard times.
And there's also some interesting factoids here where, because they did cut these shorts up, release them separately, and if we were to look at these three shorts as individual shorts, these are apparently the last ones that Frizz ever did, technically, so that's kind of sad.
Well, that's a great one to go out on, Frizz. Yeah, I'm gonna go out on the one where there's a badly animated horse for him to ride. That's a fine way to rest my legacy on.
Yeah. Well, for... Arn, wait.
Oh, what? Man.
So, it's been almost about a month. By the way, just for you people at home, whenever we've, ever since we recorded this episode, whenever we go back up to record a new one,
Wilford Brimley is staring at us from this episode.
Wilford Brimley is staring right at us, because what happened was, and I don't know if it comes through in the episode, I sent in a photo of Wilford Brimley in our Discord chat.
And he looks pissed.
He looks right at us. So every time we start an episode, we go to the theme song, and there's Wilford Brimley. Also above it is a picture of Godzilla with a gun. And no, yeah. I don't know why that's there.
Mark, what I want you to do is I want you, when this goes out, to just post that picture of Wilford Brimley without any context on the Twitter feed so that they can get the experience we're getting. The power of Wilford.
Yeah, actually, it'd be amazing if just like on the day this comes out, I just go, this week, picture Wilford Brimley. That's it. You know, no summary, no anything. Just like, what the fuck? It's like, just oh.
No, we love Wilford Brimley, though. Wilford Brimley was an excellent actor.
Yes. And I love his work in Daredevil.
No, that's... Mm. Thank you for your comment, R-Winger24.
Yes,
now back to our regularly scheduled tomfoolery. Please tell me the next one we're doing is better.
The next one we're doing is better.
Oh, thank God.
In that, we gave Daffy one try as special, and it sucked. So for the next couple, a majority of them actually, Bugs Bunny focused. They're all Bunny focused. And we're taking a swift 180. We're still going to be in springtime, so it's still going to be weird. You know, it's in May and doing another spring one. But this one is called Bugs Bunny's Bursting Out All Over.
Oh dear. Hopefully everybody's okay with that.
Yes. Actually, I do find this one to be the most well-known, I think, of the TV specials.
Yeah, with a title like that. In it.
Yeah, you. Yes. So it's... I have reasonable expectations, because, well, for one thing, it was directed by Chuck Jones's team.
Good.
It was a Chuck Jones production made in accordance with the Warner Brothers people. And if you want to watch it, you can watch, if you have the Looney Tunes Golden Collection Volume 5, it's on there, as that's where I saw it. And it's also on the Essential Bugs Bunny DVD set from 2010, Disc 2. So you have either of those, you can watch it there.
Yeah. Bursting out all over. Yeah, we're going to have fun with that title.
Do I just have the intro music be like generic sex music?
No, to have the intro music be Jacking It in San Diego from South Park. Jack it, whack it.
Or Pump It Up by Elvis Costello.
You know what? That's a genuinely good song. It should be that.
Also, if you have the Golden Collection Volume 5, it's on Disc 4 of that collection. So that's
right, and I do have that one, and I will maybe watch it there.
All right.
Let's put this one to bed.
That's the end of this week's show. If you like keep up with us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
You can also find me on Twitter at TallGuySchmidt.
If you like keep up with our podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at @_Looney. Or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find this podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Anchor, Stitcher, Amazon Music, and Frizz Freeling's podcast service, which is called John Dunn
Cast. All right. So until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And remember, the reason why Daredevil is bad is because he probably has diabetes. Good night, y'all. Farewell.